Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns and this is my podcast for people who would like to be out of doors, but for reasons that everyone's pretty familiar with by now, are actually stuck indoors. Although our escape may be imminent, let's hope so. A couple of weeks ago, I was able to travel down to the Cairngorms and climb Cairngorm itself, which is a very special thing to do, really. I think for all of us who travel the mountains in Scotland and in the UK, the Cairngorms is a really special area. It's a huge place. It's got a sense of sort of wildness, I think, that nowhere else has, really. There is nowhere quite like the Cairngorms. And my guest today is actually, I think, the very first writer in residence at the Cairngorm National Park. She's an author. And she is also a playwright. So I'm delighted to have with me today Merin Glover. Hello, Merin, how are you?
Hi, John, I'm really well. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
No, it's great. I know, thanks for coming, you know. So I did read a little bit of your bio and it tells me that you were born in Kathmandu and but you're actually an Australian citizen. How on earth did you manage that?
by no talent of my own, actually. My parents are Australian citizens, so I am an Australian citizen by descent. But I was born in Kathmandu because they were working in Nepal at the time. So it was just a sheer stroke of good fortune, really.
Oh, I see. And did you spend your early life in Nepal, or was it, or did you come home or back to Australia fairly quickly then?
Yeah, no, I grew up there in Nepal and India and latterly Pakistan as well till I was 18. And at that point, then I went back to Australia, not for the first time. My parents would go back about every 3 or 4 years for home leave. So I was familiar with Australia, but I went back, moved back really when I was 18 and finished school. And I went to university in Melbourne.
Right. So what was it like for you then, having such a, well, sounds a fairly exotic upbringing to me anyway, but what was that like?
Well, I guess when it's your own life, you don't think of it or experience it as exotic. It's normal. And it's really only later on, as other people hear about it and want to find out more about it, that you realise how unusual it is within the context of Australians. So I mean, yeah, it was, I realise, a very rich upbringing. It was extraordinary. It was very special. And I'm very glad to have had that experience, which involved everything from living in a small village up in the mountains in Nepal, where we had no running water or electricity and there was no road. And it was just very basic circumstances that we lived in, very much like most of the other folk in the village. So that sort of context, as well as time in the cities like Kathmandu, New Delhi, Hyderabad in Pakistan, and then times up in the mountains in North India, the school that I went to was right up in sort of 7,000 feet up in the Garhwal Himals, and that was a very beautiful place to be as well. So I feel exceptionally lucky to have had the opportunity to be in all of those places and to know them as home at the time. Yeah.
So mountains must be very much in your blood then. What made you make the pretty vast leap to living in the Cairngorms?
Well, for love. I met my now husband Alistair actually in Kathmandu when I was traveling around the world, which is something of an Australian rite of passage that at some point during or after your university years, you've got to take the year off and travel the world. And I'd obviously been lucky enough to have had a lot of travel already, but I was back there to visit my parents who were still working in Nepal. And lo and behold, this very handsome doctor from Scotland walked into the guest house. The rest is history. It was the start of a beautiful thing. So we met and had this kind of long distance relationship for a time. And so that's how I ended up coming to join him to live in Scotland. We got married in 1994. We lived initially in the Central Belt in Stirling. And then we moved up to this area, to the Cairngorms area, about 15 years ago, and have called this home ever since. And in fact, this house here that I live in is the longest I've ever lived anywhere in the world. So it has really quite a powerful sense of home, even though in many ways I'm an incomer, I'm not a Scot, but I am by heart now, you know, it's the place that I have embraced and it's taken me to heart really, so it's very much become my home, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's very much a sense that you become very much attached to these to the Cairngorms and the wildness of the place. Well, what did it feel like when you first moved here? Because obviously the transition from Australia to here must have been a pretty vivid contrast at the time.
Yes, absolutely, and as you say, you know, I did have this love of mountains. You know, growing up in the Himalayas. It was just being surrounded by some of the most spectacular peaks on earth, you know, often at quite a distance, obviously, but so those were the mountains that I'd known growing up and loved. So to be honest, when I first came to Scotland and was taken on this thing called hill walking, which normally involved a lot of mist and rain and mud, and I honestly, I couldn't fathom what on earth people were doing it for, you know, and when I look back, actually, when I was visiting Alistair in 1992, when we were still just kind of early days of romance, Cairngorm was the first place he took me to go walking. And I only realised this later, just kind of looking back through albums and thought, oh, gosh, I never realised I went up to the Cairngorms way back then. And that day, to be fair, wasn't raining, and that was beautiful. We went up over the top of Cairngorm and down into Loch Arn.
Uh-huh.
But another day in that same summer, there's this photograph of me looking like a drowned rat at the top of some, I don't know, godforsaken hill somewhere in my little cotton tracky trousers and just wet to the skin. And, you know, I do remember that day. I didn't go to the top. There was the group that were soldering onto the top, and then myself and two others just said, what is the point of this? Let's just go back down. and I remember in early days thinking, you know, why don't they just wait for a sunny day? And then I realised why they don't just wait for a sunny day, because, you know, you might be waiting a very long time. And I also realised that gradually, as I kind of got used to a very different experience of hills, and as that sunshine does come out, there is something really quite special and spectacular in the Scottish hills as well. But it was quite an adjustment for me, because I think having grown up in the Himalayas, to be honest, initially Scotland's mountains didn't really impress, and I was thinking, what is this all about? But, you know, as I've grown to know them more and spent more time in them, and, you know, been, you know, around some of those spectacular peaks over on the West Coast and Skye and these places, but also really coming to explore and know the Cairngorms better, you discover, just how ancient these mountains are, that were once probably as tall as the Himalayas, and to realise what a long story they have and how much is beautiful and spectacular and remarkable in these mountains if you give them the time and you just go deeper into them. And so that's been the big journey for me, really.
So, yeah, you talked about the stories that are in Scotland's mountains, and you know, there are incredible stories about all our hills and our wild areas. Tell me a little bit about you are writer in residence with the Cairngorm National Park. What's that been like, and how's that experience been for you?
Well, that was actually a project in 2019, so I'm no longer in that role.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know that.
It was a specific project for that year, but that was absolutely fantastic. It was an amazing experience, which, you know, the park really embraced the project, and what it was about was me meeting with people from the park right across the length and breadth of it, and it's a pretty big space. And just giving people the opportunities and encouraging them to capture in words their relationship with the natural environment, out of the recognition that it's a really key relationship, that as human beings, we thrive best when our natural environment is healthy. And for our natural environment to be healthy and in good shape, we need to care about it. And so it's often through a creative process, whether that's photography or writing music or putting things in words, it's often through a creative process that we really come to recognize the value of the natural world around us. We really begin to look at it more deeply, to actually open all of our senses to experience it more deeply. And then in a sense, we want to give back to that through our creative expression, but also through just the ways in which we live that will better look after this place. So that was the essence of the project. And we worked with kids in schools and older folk out on health walks and everybody in between. There was opportunities for some of the tourists that were coming through to take part. We were involved in Cairngorms Nature Big Weekend and the Forest Fest Weekend at the Highland Folk Museum, and all different kinds of folks, rangers, land-based workers, teachers, and so on, were just given opportunities to come and kind of work together, often at outdoor workshops, where we just took time to really enjoy and open ourselves to the environment and then just respond by writing about it. And it was really rich. It was really exciting to see some of the things that people did write and did discover, and the ways in which people enjoyed one another through that process as well.
Yeah, I think there's a very strong relationship really between landscape and wilder environments and creativity, because you've only got to look at the amount of mountain literature there is to see that is a strong relationship. If we come on now to you're just about to publish, I think, is it your second book of Stone and Sky? Mm. And that sounds, was that, how did the, do you think the hills of interest influenced your writing?
Yes, that's right. So Of Stone and Sky is my second novel, and that comes out with Polygon exactly 1 week today from when we're recording, although I think the show will go out just a few days before it comes out on the 6th of May. And it's set here where I live in Badenoch, which is the strath at the source of the River Spey, the upper end of the Spey Valley. So it's set here in this valley and in the mountains that surround it. We have the monoliths on the western side and the Cairngorms on the east. And in the story, it follows a Highland shepherd who disappears, and he leaves this strange trail of his possessions heading up into the Cairngorm Mountains. So for me, having lived here for such a long time, well, in my terms, quite a long time, I literally woke up in the very early hours of the midsummer night, the shortest night of the year, in 2013, and there was this really powerful idea which I started to write. And that was already right from the beginning. The first words were a land. It was about a place. It was about the people that have shaped this place and been shaped by it. And the story of that relationship particularly followed through the life of the shepherd. The story kind of circles out around his sort of foundling sister, foster sister, and his rebel, prodigal brother, as the two of them really tell the story of the shepherd Colvin and ask, why did he go? He vanishes, he walks away. And so they're driven to find out what drove him away, what made him go. And in that process, the story embraces that whole community and their sense of complicity with what happened to him, their sense of guilt and grief about his going. And in so doing, it then opens up the whole story of this landscape and its history and the harms and the hurt that have happened over quite a long time, not only to the people, but to the land, and that both people and land need healing.
I think that's a really important point, in that our relationship with the landscape has been, uncomfortable is not the right word, but I mean the history of our landscape is one where we've not particularly been very kind to it, really, and we're beginning now. I think things are changing. There's a debate starting, but was that the ravages that we've inflicted on our landscape, even, and the people who live there? If you go back to the clearances, is that something you sort of explored in the novel?
Very much so. Yes. So there is a thread in the novel that goes back, you know, and remembers the clearances.
Uh-huh.
Not in any huge detail, but that is recognized as a necessary understanding to know where we're at today. Because actually, yes, when I started to write it, I thought it would just be a contemporary story. But I realized very quickly, as soon as you start to write about the land, you can't ignore the history, that the land is steeped in a history that explains why it is the way it is today. And that so much of what we look at when we look at these hills and these straths, and what we think of as normal, in fact, what people think of as beautiful and untouched wilderness, is anything but.
Absolutely.
It is every inch and facet of this landscape has been shaped by human interactions with it, and as you say, often for worse rather than for better. So I realized that to write a contemporary story that has any meaning about the landscape, we have to acknowledge the history. We have to go back to it. So there is a kind of a backstory that unspools through the course of the contemporary story. And yeah, as you say, that history around sheep, around the management of Highland sporting estates, because in a sense, what kicks off the story is that the Highland sporting estate where it's based is up for sale.
Ah, okay.
And so it's story as to how it got to this place and who is going to buy it and what's going to happen with it and how that will affect everybody involved in the community is part of that story as well.
Yeah, I think that the relationship between ourselves as a population and the landscape is pretty complex. I think things are happening now. Things are changing because you've very contrasting areas within the Cairngorms. You've got some very traditional sporting estates where Muirburn is a very current practice, which is where the heather is burnt. And I was on in the Cairngorms about 6 weeks ago maybe, and it was a beautiful day, and I was on the summit of a small hill, and everywhere you looked there was smoke on the horizon, and we are literally burning the landscape. And yet there is rewilding in places like Glen Fechy, which is changing things. In a way, we're right in the middle of a debate, because I think I have the sense, certainly, that things are changing. Is that something that you explored yourself in the book?
Yes, to an extent, definitely. And you're right, there is a lot of change, and a lot of that's very exciting. I live right next to Glen Fechy.
Right.
And so even in the 15 years that I've been here, I have seen the return of the trees to lots of those slopes that were completely bare when we arrived. And that's been incredibly exciting to see. And the work of Cairngorms Connect, which is, you know, the sort of large four neighbouring estates there that are working together on a big landscape regeneration project. That's been really amazing to see that come together and moving forward. And it is a model for how these large estates can be managed in Scotland. As you say, there are some still very traditional estates that are doing their sporting in a way that is simply not in harmony with the landscape. And so, that's something that the novel explores, and also looks at the idea of, community buyout of land, that is an exciting option that's becoming more and more accessible to communities in Scotland. And that can really change the shape of not just the landscape, but the people that live in and around it, because those two are so closely tied together. People's sense of investment in and reward from the land that they live on. Too often, historically in Scotland, our land ownership pattern has been so unjust and so unequal that I think we're one of the worst countries in Europe in terms of our land ownership pattern. And so that is, again, something that the novel, you know, looks at is, I mean, obviously it's a novel, it's a story, it's not a political treatise. But it does actually look at what that means in the story of a person's life if they have very little control over the land where they live and where they have to earn their livelihood.
Yeah, I think the issue of land ownership is really crucial, I think, to the way our landscape develops. I mean, it always strikes me that one of the great injustices in the Highlands is that huge areas of land are owned by folk who essentially use it in the way they feel is appropriate, as their whims dictate. And Queen Victoria, of course, has a lot to bears a heavy responsibility that, because she obviously
gets a mention in the novel.
Oh, I'm very pleased to hear it. She damn well needs it, because it was Queen Victoria who popularized the idea of this mythic Highlands that was a great place to go shooting and hunting, and everybody wore tartan and played the bagpipes, and it kind of wasn't really ever like that until she popularized it, and that has kind of damaged the Highlands, I think, enormously. You can't obviously give anything away. It's a novel, so we don't want to spoil the storyline, you know. But do you looking at the Cairngorms yourself as someone who has probably got quite a good perspective on it, because you come from a very different area, are there ways that you'd like to see it develop then?
Yes, I very much long to see regeneration in the Cairngorms, to see natural processes being restored. And, you know, nature is extraordinarily powerful at making things work if left to do its own work. But a lot of the time what's happened is the kind of damage that we have wreaked across the landscape means that if it's just left to its device, nature can always recover, because sometimes there's a loss of seed source and erosion and, as you mentioned, burning and things like that, that make it very difficult for nature to heal all by itself. In the first instance, we've lost our keystone predators and things like that. So there are levels of intervention that I think are needed at a certain stage in that process in order to restore seed source and, you know, certain animals in the pyramid, that then gradually in time, as some of those things are put back into the landscape and into the whole network, the whole web of interactions within the natural environment, then nature increasingly can just be left to do its own work and to recover and to heal. I think one of the big challenges in that whole process is for people to find their place within that. And that's something that I feel very passionately about, is we belong here too. We are natural, you know. It's not that human beings are aliens from another planet, or that we are an invasive species, even though so often we behave like it. And one of the problems with environmental narratives sometimes is they seem to suggest that the world would be a better place without us. And that I think there are certain times when certain landscapes need levels of protection that mean people just shouldn't go there for a time. Yeah, I think that's correct. But I think in order to move forward with regeneration and to be realistic about that, but also to find an honest way to live in the world, we have to acknowledge we're here, we belong here. And rather than that being some kind of a fight, we need to find how we can belong here naturally, how we can work more closely with the natural environment, and that that doesn't strip us of our rights or our opportunities, that actually, when we have a naturally rich environment, it is better for us as people. It doesn't deny us economic opportunities. It can actually bring us better economic opportunities. It can help communities to thrive, definitely to be happier and healthier. You know, if the COVID pandemic has taught us anything, it's how much we need our natural environment, how much we crave, as you were saying at the beginning, being allowed to be out and in it. And, you know, it's been amazing. I found locally in this area, I have seen so many people take to bicycles and and yes. families out walking together and doing things that they just were too busy for in the past. And so I think we've recognized that if we have an abundant natural environment, that enriches us. It doesn't impoverish us, you know. So I think a big part of our narrative and our approach towards regeneration, in not just in the Cairngorms but throughout Scotland, throughout the world, needs to be one in which we recognise the wholeness of place, that people are a part of that, and we need to reframe our economies around healthy people in a healthy environment.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think one of the roles that perhaps you and I have in common, in a sense, as a storyteller, is I think I wrote Skydance, which was my attempt at a sort of eco novel, if you like. And
yes, absolutely.
I wrote that, I think, because I felt that there's an awful lot written in terms of academic work about rewilding and about about ecology and the environment, but a lot of that tends to be fairly dry, and I think that one of the things that really changes people is if you can actually engage their imagination, imagine what this place could be like, and I think that's a very different, you know, that's a very different thing. Do you think is that some way? Do you think you'll explore in your future writing? Where do you think you'll go from here? Difficult question to answer, I know.
Well, I'm actually, you know, a long way into thy next book, which interestingly is non-fiction. So,
right.
To some degree, that's kind of a departure. But it's absolutely the same territory. I'm still in the Cairngorms. And this upcoming book is a response to Nan Shepherd's classic work, The Living Mountain, written about the Cairngorms.
Yes, indeed.
And that book has come to be regarded as one of the finest works of landscape and nature writing in the UK and is becoming internationally recognised. And so my publisher, who are bringing out the novel, Polygon, invited me to take on this project of writing a response to her work, specifically The Living Mountain, but what I've ended up responding to is quite a lot of her other writing as well, because in her three works of fiction and in her published poetry, she did write a lot about nature and landscape as well. Mm-hmm. And my book is called The Hidden Fires, A Cairngorms Journey with Nan Shepherd. So again, I find through that, but through the very different medium of non-fiction, I'm exploring the same landscape and looking at different aspects of it, different routes in and through it, both literally and metaphorically. And that's been a fascinating journey, and particularly to, in a sense, have a conversation with Nan Shepherd over time, because we have a lot in common. We're both women in our early 50s at the point in which we're writing about the Cairngorms. And we were both, you know, teachers of English professionally at a different stage. And we both wrote in different mediums. So she had, you know, written these three novels. She'd written poetry, which I've done as well. And so it's just been fascinating to kind of get to know her more, both through her writing, through work that's been written about her, but also just been going into the landscape through the lens of her experience in many ways. So that's been a really interesting journey. And in that book, I guess I do explore more, like there is a chapter in there where I talk quite explicitly about Glenn Fesci and what's been happening there and the impact of that. So yeah, that's been fascinating to come to this same landscape, but on the one hand through story, through a novel, and then secondly through nonfiction, which goes into some of the story of my own background and my own life in mountains, growing up in Asia, and then the differences of those experiences and the ones here as well.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating.
So, yeah, it's been a
It sounds really.
Thank you. It's been a real privilege to work on it. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds great. So, but anyway, listen, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because your novel of Stone and Sky, that's published on the 6th of May. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
And if people want to go along, what I'll do is I'll put some links to where you can obtain that book on the podcast page. And it sounds like, well, I suppose all books are a journey, and I always feel there's a commonality between exploring the hills and writing a book, because they're both journeys, and maybe we don't come back the same people at the end of it either. So
no, I think that's absolutely right. Yeah.
So anyway,
it changes you.
It does. And let's hope it's an exploration that we can both continue for a long time. It's been fascinating talking to you. All the very best with your writing and your book. And I very much look forward to reading it. Merrin Glover, thanks very much for your time.
Oh, well, thank you, John, for having me on the show. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
You're very welcome. Thanks then.